Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by the second annual Catskill Cuisine Festival. Visit catskill-cuisine.com to learn more and buy tickets.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm your host, Darren Bresnitz. I am so excited to welcome back Jess Damick, whose new book, Health Nut, is out right now on Abrams. I loved it. You should pick it up. We chat about the journey from the first book to the second book, the vibrations she finds in food, creating a community around her, and some of the music that pops up in the pages. And then it is a dip into the archives for one of our favorite artists, Tomi, who stopped by, I believe, in 2018 to join us on the heels of the release of her EP, What Kind of Love. You may have seen her recently DJing during the Romy tour, and it is a fantastic conversation, and the music just rips. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy Snacky Tunes here on HRN.
So I was taking out my old trash bin. A photo fell out that I threw in. It was you and me in a country scene. Long hair, long grass, and your glasses gleamed. We looked happy as a clam, happy as can be. Only you and I know the fun we had. If that picture can move, it would move through me. And if it could talk, it would talk for me. Who ever told me that love was just a fun game I played once, nobody won? Who ever told me that love was just a key, and if I could handle it, then it could handle.
Watching sitcoms on repeat while the dog runs around the house. If I was in your love, then who was I? Who was I? If I was in your love, then who was I? Who was I? I always think of you. And I'll always think of you while I'm staring at the moon. And I'll always think of you while I'm wondering why. Life goes on and on, and still the leaves are born to die. I'll always think of you. Life keeps going on, and still our picture never dies.
Jess, welcome back to Snacky Tunes. So good to see you.
You too. Thanks for having me.
Oh my God. You know, you get some emails that come in, and I don't think I could have responded to this one fast enough. It definitely was under a minute when I was like, absolutely, Jess, come back. We had you on for your first book. Congratulations on the new one, Health Nut. And before we talk about it, I want to go back to that first one. What do you remember from that time when it came out? Like, what was that experience like post-publishing, even 6 months after it came out?
You know, Salad Freak was such a fun book, and it was so different because it felt like, you know, many, many years of life and experiences and recipes finally finding this home in this collection. And I really went into it with zero expectations. You know, the publisher was like, this is a beautiful book, but we're not sure how excited people are going to be about salads. Like, you know, let's not get our hopes up here. And I really went into it just saying to myself, like, I'm going to do as much as I can to market it because I really want to be able to write another book. Mm-hmm. And that was really my goal. I wasn't thinking like, I need to get on the New York Times bestseller list. I need to be like standing out in this huge crowd of cookbook authors. And I think not having high expectations or any expectations, really, I was delightfully surprised by what happened and to see people really excited about the book and to be using it so much.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen you repost even still. Reposting yeah. people who are tagging you and things that they're making. Never and underestimate the power of a staple.
Totally. I mean, people love Salad Freak and it's doing really, really well still.
Yeah.
I think that was a really fun surprise. I like looked on, you know, I try not to look at Amazon too much, but I looked at like the top vegetable books and I was like, Health Nut got knocked down. Like what else is there? And I was like, oh, it's Salad Freak.
Yeah,
a bad problem to have.
Not a problem. You know, some people love that debut album, and like I love the sophomore album. It's got its hits, but sometimes you want to go back, dig back in.
It's hard. The sophomore slump can be a real thing. It's funny. I've been, you know, working pretty closely with Benny Blanco, who's a record producer, and he really like talked to me a lot about that. He's like, the second album, it's really, really hard.
Well, you know, and you touched on this, the first album, the first cookbook, the first anything is you have a lifetime to write it. Mm-hmm. And people are like, there's no expectations. What's it going to be? And I'd love for you to talk about it. When the second book comes around, it is a much shorter window because mm-hmm. they're trying to capitalize on success of the first. But how did that process work for you? Did you already have an idea for Health Nut, or did Abrams see that the book is doing well and they're like, what else you got in the bank?
They wanted the book so quickly. I'm not sure. Am I supposed to hit record or are you recording all of this?
I'm recording all of this.
Okay,
I got you.
Great. Okay. Yeah. So it was a much, much different experience. I kind of signed this book deal right away and I was already working on the book with Benny, and I thought that timeline was going to be a little different. And when it, basically I wrote this book in like 3 months, all the recipes. I shot it right after I finished the manuscript. And then we edited it over the summer, submitted it in the fall, and here it is. It was so fast.
Wow.
And, you know, for me, there's something to moving quickly. I think if I had had a lot of idle time, I would have really like overthought everything. I don't know if I ever would have been able to submit a manuscript because I feel like I would have really gotten stuck trying to make it perfect, trying to make it feel different. And I really just had to go with my gut instinct. And my publisher had really just wanted a vegetable book, like a really clear cut follow up to Salad Freak, like the same thing, but slightly different.
Like in conversation with each other.
Yes.
Sure.
And, you know, I made my table of contents. Like, obviously, I love vegetables. It was easy to think of a lot of new ideas. But I started cooking and I wasn't super excited about it. I, you know, had been making pretty much just salads for a couple of years at this point.
Sure.
And, you know, a vegetable book allowed me to bake a little. There were, you know, more like breakfasty things and different things in the mix. But when I would go to cookbook stores and look at the shelves, I was like, there are so many books about vegetables.
So many.
You know, there were whole sections of books on vegetables.
Yeah.
And I found like a lot of the books are either, you know, sort of waxing poetic about how incredible seasonal produce is with these really, this gorgeous imagery and, you know, like seasonal still lives and sort of, you know,
right.
Like, I think.
And I know you talk about radishes, but 30 pages on radishes and waxing philosophically in these books. And you're like, we got it.
Yeah,
totally
you know, and it's easy to do. I understand why it happens because I go out to my garden and I feel the same way, but I just didn't see the need to put another one on the shelf. And I think the other sort of approach I've seen is like really fun, illustrated vegetable books that are trying to get people kind of more excited about eating them. And
sure.
Then I went up to Omnivore Books in San Francisco and they have an incredible vintage cookbook collection.
Mm.
And I really just pulled a bunch of books off the shelves for design inspiration. And Celia, the owner, was like, you know what? They're just like, they don't make books like this anymore. And I was like, you know what? What are the books that I like actually really love reading and looking at for inspiration? And like, what's the food I'm craving after sort of being in output mode so much these past couple of years?
Right.
And I was like, it's this like old school health food. I love it. Like Moosewood Cookbook, Angelica
Legendary.
Kitchen, like all of these sort of things. And I hadn't seen a book like that come out in a while. There are, of course, are a lot of books about wellness, and these sort of aspirational lifestyle cookbooks that, you know, I sort of flip through the pages and I'm like, oh, this is how I would love to eat, but I can't even get it together to do this. Like it's seems hard. It's expensive. It requires like getting to the farmer's market every week.
Yeah.
And honestly, like I'm like burnt out and I need food that feels like fuel, that feels really nourishing, but that's not like, I don't have the energy to go to a bunch of different stores to get the ingredients I need. Like I want to, you know, either go to Whole Foods or Trader Joe's or put it in an Instacart order and still be able to eat foods that are really fresh and delicious, but I'm not using every pot and pan in the kitchen.
No. And that's how people cook. And it's more realistic as well.
Yeah.
Cause these aspirational cookbooks are just, they're really tough. I know you talk about like the cyclical nature and pulling these old books off the shelf because there weren't really like aspirational books back then in the sort of the same way that there were today. It was more like, hey, if you want to cook this way, here's a guide. Like, we don't know if these are all together. And I feel like that book really taps into like that vibe of the 70s, like the macrobiotic, like the cooking. Mm-hmm. It's just like, and you really nailed it. Because it's like, I know you want this lifestyle and it's tough to get, but like, read this book and like, look at my philosophy on life. And you can get there without having to drop a ton of money or like drop out of the mainstream completely.
Totally. And I think, you know, it also really seemed like time for a lot of those recipes to get sort of a facelift.
Yes.
You know, just like a little tune up.
a little zhuzh.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, reading about sort of the health food movement in the 60s and 70s and really kind of how radical it was to be eating
way. Exactly.
Was really fascinating. And, you know, as I looked at sort of some of these first cookbooks, these macrobiotic cookbooks, there's a book about tofu from like 1968 or something. And like you either had to make your own tofu or it was a mail order item. So, you know, it was really difficult to eat this way.
Now it's like we have flavored, we have reduced fat, we have, you know, soy, you know, we have super Wagyu level tofu that's more expensive than steak. Like,
totally. And, you know, we can access a lot of ingredients much more easily. And I think, you know, like my old boss at Martha Stewart, Sarah Carey, grew up on a commune in Woodstock. Mm-hmm. And she was like, oh my God, I just remember we had like one dried seasoning mix that we put on in everything. So everything tasted the same. Like, even though it was vegetarian, it was sort of like brown and all had this like one flavor profile. And, you know, that's like, I think anyone who ate that way is like a little bit nostalgic for it, but also a little traumatized.
Yeah.
And it's like you can still eat that kind of hippie food, but it can also feel really fresh and delicious.
Well,
I think striking that balance was really important to me.
Yeah, because even on the cover of this book, when I was like trying to eat healthy in college, it was rice, it was tofu, broccoli, a little bit of like amino acid. It never looked this colorful. It never felt that new. But beyond the food in the book and the recipes, there was this whole idea of community and creating a new relationship in life, because it has been so tenuous. Like, it's been a really weird time the last few years, but also with like social media and the trappings of that. And what really struck me is what you talk about, you and your partner, Ben, recreating this extension from the food, but out to like having people over and hosting and creating sort of like an open door policy. How do you see like the community creation and the recipes and the food and the lifestyles, like all working together?
I mean, all of it, you know, really feels like it all kind of happened very organically when I moved to Los Angeles. You know, not that I didn't have a strong community in New York, because I did and I still do, but I had an oversized coffee table that served as my dinner table for many years. You know, I really could only have 4 people in my apartment at one time. So I was still having people over. It was just a much different experience. Now, you know, being able to be outside and have different areas where, like, yeah, if Ben's, you know, the whole time I was working on this book, Ben was recording an album with some friends. Mm. And we had a musician from Berlin and a sound engineer from Ram Dass's house in Maui staying with us, and all these people. And I could be in my own world in the kitchen and not even like be aware that they were sort of doing their own thing. And then we'd all come together for lunchtime or for dinner or to taste things. And that sort of creative flow state has been going on here for the past couple of years. And it's really great. And I think, you know, I had always really loved California, but that being so incredibly inspired by being here hasn't worn off in the past couple of years. If anything, it got even stronger. I think, you know, being able to like walk outside and grab a lemon is still, still very novel and still like felt like this is what I want to write a book about because it's incredible. And I think, you know, the book, writing the book can be a kind of solitary experience if that's the direction you go in. You know, you're by, you could be by yourself in your kitchen or in your office sitting at the computer for a long time. But I felt so lucky to be able to have a lot of people around to taste it. And then of course, creating the book itself requires a lot of collaboration. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you'll be interested in this part. I had been looking for somebody to work on the cover of Salad Freak in 2022. And my friend Dan Deacon was like, I've been working with the same guy forever who designs all my record covers. Like, you should talk to him.
Legendary.
So I got connected with this guy, Rob Carmichael. Mm-hmm. And we had like a great conversation. We didn't end up working together on that one, but we stayed in touch. And I tagged a photo on Instagram one day in Montecito Heights, which is the neighborhood I live in here. And he messaged me and was like, what are you doing in Montecito Heights? And I was like, well, I live here. Why? And he's like, you're kidding. And I was like, no, why? And he's like, I live in Montecito Heights. And we found out we literally live like a 2-minute walk away from each other.
Wow.
It had never come up on the phone call. We had no idea.
Very LA. Very LA to be like, oh, I had no idea who my neighbors are sometimes.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, when I had the opportunity to write another book, I was like, we have to work together. And I felt like once I knew I wanted to go with this sort of 70s look and feel, I was like, perfect. He's the perfect person to work with. Somebody who's outside of the cookbook world, who's used to kind of like doing this like very tasteful retro stuff is like, this is going to be great.
And it comes through.
Yeah, it was so amazing working with him. And then another really funny coincidence was that he happened to design Roger Steffens, aka the Family Acids book about California, which when I was putting together my, you know, vision board for this book, I had used so many of Roger's photos as the reference for what I wanted this book to look like. And, you know, Roger is 82 and I knew he lived in California, but I didn't know that much about his story. And Rob was like, he lives like 10 minutes away. Like he would definitely, like he's shooting all the time. Like he would definitely want to get involved. So, Roger shot all the lifestyle photography in the book. And now, Roger and his wife, Mary, are great friends.
I love that.
Yeah. And it's been really, really like, just, it's made the process so much more fun. You know, usually when you write a cookbook, you can't even like communicate directly to the designer.
That was similar to the experience we had.
Yeah. Usually the, you know, editor will act as sort of a go-between.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You can send inspiration, but I felt that that was very, very hard for me. I'm a total, you know, control freak with this sort of thing. And I really just felt like this book is so personal and I have such a clear idea of what I want it to be. I need to like be sitting around a table with someone and showing them all these books I'm really excited about and, you know, have somebody come into my house and like see the colors that I love and taste the food. Like it's a whole sit around my table when I have a dinner party and like understand the energy and the feeling. So
that was always so wild when people like design books and have never tasted the food.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it was crazy. It was such a big disconnect. And I felt so lucky to be able to work with Rob and to have, you know, a unique experience in creating this book for sure.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick musical break. And when we come back, I want to talk about some of the music in the book, some of the vibrations of the book, and a bit of the openness of the book that I really found throughout. Here you have a song from the archives here on Stacky Tunes on HRN.
Here we go. body should be, and it's taking up space in the bed where you sleep. Why would you leave? What did you see? Now I hope that you're safe wherever you are, as you spin through the streets and you swim through your cars, fighting in bars, tilting at stars. Now I'm not the comfort you need, I'm a little white lie hidden up your sleeve. I'll run from these numbers and burrow deep inside till our bodies change their minds. I'm in it deep. I'm in it deep. I'm in it deep. I'm in it deep. I picked myself up and I found a new scene where the kids are all right and the bathrooms are clean. I wouldn't leave. I'd never leave. So I wove through the crowd like a snake in the grass, like to dance like a child. But the party had passed, it wouldn't last. It couldn't last. Now aren't you the sum of my fears, with your rattling chains and your quickening years? I'll burn through these bridges and slam the open doors.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We are here with Jess Damick, whose latest book, Health Nut, out on Abrams, is fantastic and beautiful. And in the previous act, the first part of the show, you talk about just writing this and like just getting it out. And I read the whole thing, and there was this honesty and this openness that I hadn't read in a lot of cookbooks. I mean, it really felt that you were letting us into your lives and some like pretty intimate parts of your lives, your home, your partnerships, your relationships, your food. Was that intentional, or did it come because of the speed of that you had to put it out, sharing so much with the reader?
I think it was a little bit of both. I mean, I think what I enjoy about writing is being able to be very raw and real and you know, concise with language and sort of have that understanding with the reader and being vulnerable. And I think it's what I miss in a lot of cookbooks, mm-hmm. honestly, because mm-hmm. food, you know, food is such a deeply personal thing. And yeah. the act of making food for someone is a very personal thing, and so much love and feeling and tenderness and vulnerability, all of that is part of cooking. And I think because of, you know, the nature of just space on the page, head notes get chopped down to the bare mm-hmm. minimum most of the time. And I think a lot of people are like, oh, nobody even reads those. They just make the food. Like, why do you even bother? Or they have someone else write them, honestly, mm-hmm. is what I found out. And to me, it's really important. I don't know. I see a lot of, I see so many cookbooks. I get sent a million books, and mm-hmm. I just knew, like, I want, yes, I want people to buy this because of the recipes and the food, but it's also my book. So I'm going to put myself in it.
I mean, I'm sure that there are quite a few people, not all of them, because this definitely touches a certain type of person, the food they want, but like, who've going to be hearing about Ram Dass for the first time in this book, yeah. which I've never seen. How do I say this? I've never seen it in a cookbook that I also really enjoyed and wasn't like preaching to me. It was like, here is this person that's had a big influence on me and a lot of people, and here's how I'm connecting my food to it. I did not expect to see his name flipping through the pages.
Yeah, I thought, I mean, you know, that's a whole other, you'll have to have Ben on the podcast to yeah. talk about our whole Ram Dass adventure, because it's certainly been a big part of our lives. But I felt like it was really important, if I was writing about this type of food and talking about the history of California health food, it was a really amazing opportunity to talk to the people who were part of the original movement. You know, these are octogenarians who mm-hmm. will not be around for too much longer. And to be able to talk to Isis Aquarian from the Source family, for example, who, you know, the Source family was a cult in LA in the 70s that started the first health mm-hmm. food restaurant. Mm-hmm. And I know Jody Wiley, who made the documentary about the Source yeah. family a few years ago. And she was like, of course, Isis will be thrilled to talk to you. And I just felt like that was really, really important, because I, you know, at this point, nobody's making anything up out of thin air with as far no. as food goes, you know?
No.
I think recognizing that and being like, okay, here's what inspired me. Here are, you know, the people who started cooking this way. This is part of a bigger story than just me. And I felt like including that was really important. And I, you know, really believe that, like, if somebody doesn't connect to something in a book, they can just turn the page.
Absolutely. Or just put it back on the shelf at the store.
Totally. And I think even with Roger's photography, I knew, like, okay, this isn't going to be for everybody, but I love it so much. And if somebody doesn't understand what they're looking at, like, just, you know, turn the page or find a book with other, you know, photos of food.
Yeah. An overhead rustic with crumbs and jammy eggs, you know, some clotted cream. Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough, you know, making a book feel this personal required, like, pretty much shooting just in my house. And
Linda
Puglese, who shot all the food photography, had to move her camera for every single shot because I wanted to shoot on actual surfaces and not just rented, you know, slabs of material.
Yeah.
And that made for a lot more work, but it also feels real to me. You know, when are we ever just, you know, we're eating on tables, we're eating on the floor, we're eating, like,
eating on a holding our table, on the back
porch. And I think having that slice of life, and, you know, we're so lucky here, like, the sunlight is incredible, and you couldn't replicate it if you tried. So being able to shoot outside quite a bit and in the garden, I mean, yeah, it was more work, but totally worth it.
There's another part of your book that I really love. And it's, I mean, look, something that I would say hit home because something I'm trying to do as well, but it's about being easier on yourself. And it's very easy to pick up a cookbook and see this life that you've built and be like, well, my life isn't this or my life isn't that. And then you think that the people who are making these things also can feel that, like, well, my life isn't this, my life isn't that. Why put that in a cookbook about being easier on yourself when so many times it's these books are about like being aspirational? Because I could easily see this book being like, this is how you build your own community. This is how you build your own structure out back. This is how you go shopping for tofu. But it's just like, follow this, but like, be easy, go easy.
I think especially in the world, the social media world, you know, I think there are so many wellness influencers and these people who are living this aspirational lifestyle, who are giving you the most curated version of what they're all about.
Yeah.
And I see it all the time. And I think it's all over LA. It's everywhere, but it's like heightened.
Really in
here.
LA. Yeah.
And, you know, you have no idea what's going on with anybody or what their real life really looks like. And I think that it's felt really important to me in a book about health food, because the definition of health food is very loose. I'm not a nutritionist. I don't, you know, I still use butter and I use a lot of olive oil and I use a lot of things. And I don't like want to tell anybody what they should be doing. I just want to offer up like the things that make me feel good. And I think that we put an incredible amount of pressure on ourselves to, you know, look better, feel better, fit into a certain type of clothes, look the way certain people do. And, oh, would I feel better if I were taking these like expensive supplements from Erewhon, like this influencer is like, why is her skin so shiny? Why is it like, it's just, there's so much all the time, everywhere you look. And I think that just the best thing we can do for ourselves is like remind ourselves every once in a while, like, hey, we're doing okay.
We're doing okay.
I know I certainly had to do that many times while writing this book. I'm like, dude, this book is called Health Nut. Like, I'm not working out. I'm in like, you know, I'm sitting at my desk. Like, I need to get in really good shape before I promote this book or nobody's going to want to buy it. And like, what, you know, I'm doing it. And it's like, it's all fine.
It's all fine.
Okay. We're just people. Like, you know, I've had to work so hard to make this book and promote this book. And I feel myself pushing myself constantly beyond what's like, you know, what I would consider like normal or at least balanced. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, once I'm done, like these next couple of months, like I'll chill out. But like the world asks a lot of us, you know, it's tough out there. So when I sat down to think about what can I write about body image and about this sort of impossible standard that the world has begun to create, and even just like, you know, how much we're asked to consume all the time and buy, and how different products will make our lives better. Like sometimes really like Ben always is like very good about this, but like, he's like, just like chill out for a second and like breathe for a minute. And it really is incredible how when you're in this sort of like frenzied state of mind, like it's like taking a deep breath and being like, oh yeah, I'm actually okay. Like,
it's like finding the right vibration in life and trying to like hold on to that, which I know you say you sometimes find through different foods, and I never thought about the idea of foods having vibrations that you could then put into yourself. It was just a new way of thinking about food, which, and I have to say, like, having consumed so much food media and books over the years, tying vibrations to food was a new way of thinking about them. How do you see them connecting?
Well, it's funny because it's actually something Isis Aquarian and I talked a lot about because it was part of Father Yod or Jim Baker. His big philosophy with the Source restaurant was this idea of like whatever you put into the food is what people eating the food are going to take in. So he kind of like his general rule was like, if you have a bad vibe, like you're going to go home for the day. Like you can't work at the restaurant.
Could you imagine that now in the industry?
No, I feel like there are probably a lot of people trying to like come in and be like, you know what? I just kind of have a bad vibe today.
Yeah,
like,
sorry, chef.
But no, you know, I think it's really true. Like, but it's also not realistic that we have a good vibration every day, right?
Fair.
Like I'm in bad moods all the time and we still have to put dinner on the table.
Yeah.
So what can you do? Like, that's when you just, if you just like pause for a second and you're like sometimes I just like physically like shake it out and I'm like, oh, okay. Like, you know what? I'm going to take it easy on myself tonight and I'm going to make something really simple. Like I have this dish that Martha Stewart asked for me for lunch one day, which is just like an avocado, a supreme grapefruit and tuna from a jar that you like eat with a cracker. And you know what? That takes like 3 minutes to put together, but it tastes so good and it's like good for you. And it's like, okay, I'm able to do that for myself today. And that feels better than, you know, going to Del Taco or whatever on the way home.
Sure.
And I think, yeah, it's really pausing for a second is so much of it. But I do think it's important. Anytime I cook when I'm in a frenzied state of mind or in have a bad mood, especially if it's a big dinner party or something, like that's when everything starts to go wrong.
Yeah. It's like, you're not thinking about the timing. Your brains are somewhere else. It's just like that mental checklist goes out the window and things start falling apart. Yeah.
Yeah.
I get it. Before we go, I wanted to make sure we touched on some of the music in the book because a few things did pop up. Again, it has been a while or maybe never that I saw Green Day's Dookie reference in there. And I say that as like a seminal life-changing album from when I was young. There's, you know, you were very selective in what you put in there, like Jack Johnson's Banana Pancakes and things like that. How does music and food tie together for you, especially in this book?
It's such a huge, huge part of food and my life and cooking and all of it. And yeah, there's this funny thing with Southern California. I remember before I had committed to moving here, Ben has a like 1989 Volkswagen Vanagon. And it has like the worst speakers in the world. Like it sounds absolutely terrible. And it has a CD player and he has like Dookie and like Blood Sugar Sex Magic. and like a handful of CDs that are like so California to me.
Yeah.
And like when I was growing up on Shelter Island on the east end of Long Island, all I wanted to do was move to Southern California. I was like the biggest Blink 182 fan in the entire world. And I was like, if I could just get to San Diego, like life would be so incredible. And now that I'm here, I like still feel the same way. It's like, and it's so nostalgic and it's funny. Talk about community. We have these incredible neighbors around the corner. Darren and Em, they're artists. They're called Dabs Myla.
I love Dabs Myla.
Yeah, they have the best.
Their prints and their books. They're amazing.
Fantastic. And they are friends with like all of these musicians that I idolized when I was a teenager. And we're having dinner tomorrow night and Mark Hoppus from Blink 182 is going to be there. And I'm like, you can't sit me next to him.
No.
Like I don't get starstruck very often, but he is truly the only person I've ever like, I had to just like walk to the other side of the room. And Ben was like, what's going on? And I'm like, something about the people that you idolize as a teenager that you never thought in a million years you'd come into contact with, that it just,
That's very California as well. You're just like, there's this moving out here, especially from New York, there is like this celebrity orbit that you're like, oh, I'm here. And there's a very famous person in the restaurant or like at the grocery store or something like that.
Totally. But I think there is, I think the thing about California is it's like, you know, a lot of it's like sunshine and pulling citrus off the trees and
seeing the mountains, good vibrations. Yeah.
But like, you know what? Like even the Beach Boys have some pretty heavy stuff if you really listen, you know? And that's what I'm into.
Yeah.
Like, I think I listen to Feel Flows like on repeat, like probably like 1,000 times while I was making this book. Like there was some real like weird Brian Wilson energy going on at certain, points.
That vibration in the book. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's really fun. Like having like the pop punk and the Sublime and the, all of that good stuff. But then there's like all this weird stuff going on in California too. That's a big
part. There's
a
lot of space. There's a lot of space to be like weird and dark and build your own thing. And it's sort of great.
There's an essay in the book about that. And my editor was like,
I love that essay on California.
Yeah. There are a couple lines. She's like, what are you talking about? It's like, listen, like Benny Blanco has this mansion in Malibu that's going to get like sucked up by it's in a sinkhole and the sea is going to eat it in a couple of days. I'm like, that is like so messed up. And I was like, and the Chateau Marmont is like the darkest place on earth. Like there's it's glamorous and it's like cool, but there's like the weirdest stuff. And that is such a part of what this place is. And that mixed with the sunshine and the Erewhon smoothies and the wheatgrass and dates and whatever. Like it's one big glorious place.
Yeah, I mean I think New York wears it on its sleeve a little bit more, and LA, you're just like, well, we're outside and it's sunny and there's nature and everyone's fit. And it's like, but just go below the surface a little bit and you'll find some of the maybe not so cheerful stuff. Well, listen, not to end on that note, love the book. It's great. It is a very much a love letter to California. I can't recommend it enough. If people want to see what you're up to or get the book or get your first book, where can they go?
They should go to my website, which is justamic.com. It has links to the book, my updated tour schedule. I'm still on tour forever, I think. So there's lots of fun stuff happening in LA. I'm going back to New York and popping up all over. So definitely go on there and see what's up.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Great to have you back.
Yeah, always nice to be back.
Always nice. And whenever the third book comes out, which I'm sure is inevitable.
Well, it's very soon. It's sooner than you think.
Yeah. We have another song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on HRN.
The bright lights of these white nights. till the dawn. There is no silence. I will keep following the sirens. There is no silence. I will keep following the sirens.
Gather your friends and family at the second annual Catskill Cuisine Festival, presented by the Sullivan Catskills Visitors Association, Bethel Woods Center for the Arts, and Resorts World Catskills. Mark your calendars for a flavor-packed weekend from May 10th to May 12th. Experience the fusion of phenomenal food and electrifying entertainment. Rub shoulders with your favorite Food Network personalities, including Andrew Zimmern, Michael Simon, Scott Conant, Marcus Samuelson, Jeffrey Zakarian, Anne Burrell, Melba Wilson, and distinguished international chefs by LaBelle Farms. Kick off the festivities with Friday's star-studded golf tournament and evening reception. Saturday heats up with free tastings, thrilling live demos, music, and family activities, culminating with a gourmet dinner hosted by celebrity chefs. And on Sunday, celebrate Mother's Day with a special celebrity-curated brunch. Tickets for this celebration are selling like hotcakes. Visit Catskill-Cuisine.com to grab your pass for this unforgettable weekend in the picturesque Catskills. See you there.
Tomi, welcome back, to Snacky Tunes.
It's good to be back. It's good to be back again.
We're not gonna keep the charade up. We already had a conversation. And the universe said, it was good, but I think we can get great. And so we're sitting down again.
It's take two.
Take two with Tomi. So congratulations. Lemon Tree is out.
And she's alive. She's well. She's thriving.
She's thriving. It's been out now for a week.
Yes. She's 1 week old.
Is your baby walking yet? And how does it feel as a proud mother to release this track into the world?
She's talking, she's walking, she's really feeling herself. She came together really quickly as an adult. She's just like, you know, she's a sensitive woman. You know what I mean? She has a lot to say. She's like, you know, she's a 7 minute, 40 second song. You know what I mean? There's depth there.
You know, when I think of 7 minute songs in my life, I think of Stairway to Heaven.
Yep.
Think of Only in Dreams, Weezer. And now I have Lemon Tree, What's the story behind this track? What did you want to stay on this epic journey?
Yeah, so I mean, it's so long, like in time-wise, because it's split into two parts, and I really wanted it to start with this kind of reflection process and really like looking into memories and what we want to remember, what we don't want to remember, like how to remember the small mundane moments, like just things like having a glass of wine or just laying in a hammock, these like really beautiful, simple moments. And this was written about a relationship that has since dissolved. Mm. And it was just a reflection about that time and kind of just paying homage to the time that we had together. And the second half of the song is this plea for forgiveness. It's all about forgiveness and regret and just, you know, growing up and realizing that everybody makes mistakes, and it's really tough to have a, you know, an open, honest relationship. I think it takes a lot of work, which I've learned just by messing up a lot. Mm-hmm. But this song is really just a representation of that. And like, in that love stays, it doesn't leave. Like if it's like real love, I think it just stays with you, which is beautiful to me. Mm.
That is a beautiful thing. You know, it's been a journey for you to get to the solo project. Cause the last time we had you on was last week, but the time before that was back in 2013, with XNY, which was a duo. What was the journey like from the duo to the solo project?
Oh man, it was, XNY was seriously like some of the most fun I've ever had. It's just mm-hmm. having that kind of band where it's just two people and you can really feed off of each other and grow together. It was really a beautiful band. Like from that moment, I really just wanted to get more into production and get more into like a really intimate, personal songwriting process. And I think with a band, especially like X and Y, where it's like as much freedom as you have because it's only two people, so it's only two opinions, it really, our whole thing was to keep it as two people. So like the dynamics of the sonic landscape were really specific. It was very much guitar, drums, vocals, and not much else. And I think with Tomi and starting that project, I just wanted to dive into like a sonic landscape experimentation, like give myself more freedom to create whatever I wanted and whatever I was feeling, which is also why this record is so exciting to me, because it's such a different direction than previous songs I've released, because it's like stripped down everything to the basics. And I'm just going to build it up from there because, dude, the pandemic got me. You know what I mean? It got everybody. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of layers.
It's a lot of layers. You did talk about that in one of the things I read, that you said sometimes we have to leave everything behind in order to evolve, which sounds like what you're doing, which is stripping the music down. But I think you're also talking about stripping your life down. How do those two dovetail?
Yeah, I started to meditate. I got really into, over the last year, I've gotten really into stripping back everything, like stripping back social time, like people. I think a lot of people like realized who were healthy and like positive friends and humans in their lives during this time, and like who was really there and who you wanted to be there for. And I think that just like that alone stripped back so much and like gave me a lot of time to myself to reflect. And I really like went back to the basics, like eat well, meditate, go for walks, go for runs. It was like doing basic human activities to just stay healthy in all senses, because it was just such a, the last like decade, seriously, since changing from XNY to Tomi has been like just a really intense ride, because it's not, there's like no one else to lean on, so it feels, I don't know, I just, it's like you have to get yourself together and strong if you want to do more with your life, you know you got a family.
I got a family, but yeah, as you get older and as everyone has their own shit, including yourself, looking externally for answers or to feel good about yourself gets harder and harder. And then you go, well, maybe I can't look outside. Maybe I got to look inside, and that some things that seem real one day are not real the next. And that's the only thing that changes is your perception.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
All right, let's hear a song. First one up is Right Through Me. What's the story behind it?
This song is exactly about what we were just saying. It's about it's about like feeling like you need outside validation and really realizing that everything is within you. And it's about feeling transparent for good or bad. It's just about being like, this is, I feel like it's like basically saying, I feel like everyone can see right through me and I don't even know what is there anymore. And it's just kind of reflecting on that thought. So anyways, here it is.
Here we go. Right Through Me, live from Tomi here on HRN.org. Amazing song, hits home, probably pretty close to home, given what I feel like I've been going through the last few weeks. You know, obviously the pandemic hit us all in different ways, and I'd love to talk about how it maybe hit you creatively. I think as an artist, there's no way not to internalize world events, personal events, and then try and make sense of it and put it back out into the world for your either yourself or to connect with, which seems to have taken the form of the Sweet Sweet Honey EP.
I think
what was the story behind it? You know, what's what did you take? What did you filter? What did you put back out?
Yeah, so I think the biggest change, especially as a musician, was, and I know a lot of musicians have felt this way, is the not being able to perform or like play, even like collaborate and play with people in the room was such a shock. Like it was an identity crisis. Like I truly like personally, just from my experience, it was just like one of those things where I was like, if I don't have that, like that's like the main reason why why I play music is just that connection. And, you know, like catching that like unexplainable energy in a room is really beautiful. And I think not being able to have that was such an intense experience that I was like, okay, what does music mean to me? I mean, I released two EPs through a major label, went through that system and came out right before the pandemic without a label, without a team, and really like started from scratch. And so I had like a big come to Jesus moment of just like, what do I want to sound like? And what, like, what's been going on in the last decade? Why do I feel so lost? And like, how do I find myself again? So this record I actually wrote as a secret. I like didn't, I wasn't going to release it. I was just going to like heal like myself and try to like understand how to be a better person and a better like friend and a better family member and just be better. And I think in doing so and in writing this music, I'm really proud of what it is. And it's not anything that I've ever released before. It's just like it's like a total starting from scratch, starting at the root moment.
But in writing and creating for something that you think no one else is going to hear, that's got to be liberating and allow you to go in a different direction than going, is this going to hit? Are people going to like this?
Yeah. And I was like, I was in LA and I flew home after this really intense breakup. And I didn't have a place to stay in LA because of the pandemic. And I felt pretty lost. And I flew home and was like, I just need to heal myself. I don't want to like, I really was almost like, I want to kill Tomi. Like, I don't even know what I want. And writing this was the most liberating thing. I just used like my dad's guitar and like all the drums in the record, which there's a few moments, are all just me like hitting a desk. Like everything is just whatever I had around. And I just didn't really, I wasn't concerned about it sounding professional. I just wanted it to sound like, I wanted to like feel it more than anything.
Yeah. I mean, that's a beautiful sentiment just to try and capture feelings and put some form to them, which I think is something that we've all been trying to do in the last year and a half.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And like get it out of your body and out of your mind and put it somewhere.
Yeah. And the fact that you can take those, put it out to music, and then it's, I mean, if not physical, say like, okay, like I've time stamped it, I've purged it. I hope people connect with it, but now I can move on to the next creative endeavor.
Totally. Exactly. It's nice. And it's so much about like grief and like healing that I do feel like it's something I hopefully the other people can connect with and that it can help them in some capacity.
Yeah. And I think it ties into the next track they're going to play, Who Was I? Which again, seems like a very reflective looking backwards and then contemplating who that person was. But tell me in your own words what the story is behind that song.
This song is about identity and the loss of identity. And really, I think from my experience, like being in a long-term relationship, as beautiful as it was, it's really easy to get lost in somebody else's perception of you. Mm-hmm. And this is about almost needing that person's gaze to tell you who you are. And when it's not there, feeling like, oh shit, like I don't even know who I am without this person next to me. Like, how am I going to stand up on my own two feet? And this, it's about wanting that feeling again, that safety, but knowing that you have to move forward to find yourself in a stronger place. So here we go.
Here we go. Who Was I by Tomi, here live on HRN.org.
So I was taking out my old trash bin. A photo fell out that I threw in. It was you and me in a country scene. Long hair, long grass, and your glasses gleamed. We looked happy as a clown. If that picture can move, it would move through me. And if it could talk, it would talk for me. Whoever told me that love was just a fun game I played once, nobody won. Whoever told me that love was just a key. If I could handle it, then it could handle me. If I wasn't your love, then who was I? Who was I? If I wasn't your love, then who was I? Who was I? So I went away. Walking down that old dirt road, the one that weaves behind my parents' home, and a leaf blew down right at my feet, and I stopped and stared like it would speak to me. Everything that comes will go. It's meant for me someday. Till then I'll walk each step alone and watch the leaves change from dead to green to gold. Who ever told you that I wasn't the one? 'Cause I love you more now than I ever did. I'm never done. I just wanna be there lying on your couch, watching sitcoms on repeat while the dog runs around the house. If I wasn't your love, then who was I? Who was I? If I wasn't your love, then who was I? Who was I? I always think of you. And I'll always think of you while I'm staring at the moon. And I'll always think of you while I'm wondering why. Life goes on and on and still the leaves are born to die. I'll always think of you. Life keeps going on and still our picture never dies.
Awesome song. Very reflective. It's, man, so much inward looking. It's so interesting to go through this slow moving global trauma tragedy together and have it feel so uniquely personal. And then at the same time, so global, but also, but yeah, not unifying in any way.
Totally. Isn't it? And it's so, isn't it bizarre that everyone is going through the same thing? I mean, obviously on different levels, but it's like we're all experiencing this one moment together as humans. And it's really, really, it's so, it blows my mind. I can't even fathom it.
Yeah. I cannot. And because I think when you start digging in and trying to compare it, it's just, I mean, it's like you said, it's like you got to just see what is your own experience. And that's sort of what you got to stack it up against.
Absolutely. And hopefully connect with other people about it.
Yeah. Allow us to, I don't want to say lighten the mood because it's not like we're having a heavy talk, but it is very rare that anyone, especially any band, ever brought us any food on the show. And you and Jacob brought these ribs. Which I still think about when you came on as X and Y.
Yes.
And we talked a little bit about cooking then, but I wanted to check in to see what you're cooking now, what food you made at your parents' house, if you dip back into childhood favorites, or was there like a mommy make me dinner type of thing?
Okay, so first of all, those ribs have won countless rib competitions.
I buy it.
It's sweet. It's salty. I mean, these are this is a classic Jacob Pam excursion.
No, it's I think about them in the Tupperware they came in, and I remember eating them on the air with no shame.
No shame.
No shame.
Yeah, I love those ribs. I think about them almost every day. I've been eating a lot of Italian. I come from an Italian family. When I was back home, it was pasta, chicken parm, chicken piccata, lots of chicken. I mean, we went all out. I'm like, I was making pasta last night. I was like, I just need my roots.
Comfort and food.
Comfort and food. I'm also a huge sushi fan, so I did dabble in a lot of sushi when I was back home. That New York life.
That New York sushi.
My mouth is watering.
It's a pricey, New York sushi is a pricey dabbling.
It is. I know. It's actually, you can have like, it's like one meal a day.
Yeah.
If that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I know the track Lemon Tree, which I believe you're going to close the show out with, is about looking backwards and things like that. But gotta hope. Are you picking lemons these days? Are you making anything with lemons? I mean, a boy can dream of a food and music show, can he? That's more than just a name only.
Oh my God, I should make lemon candies for the shows, for merch. Wow, you just blew my mind. I am picking a lot of lemons. My sister sent me a lemon tree for the album, or for the song release. So I have a lemon tree growing now in my yard. It hasn't brought any, you know, lemons to the surface, but
I mean, soon. we have a lime tree, and it's like the guys are like, yeah, in 4 years you'll get a lime. Like, okay. Sweet.
The trees are interesting. There's actually, I've heard that an avocado tree can only grow and produce avocados if there's another avocado tree right near it. Isn't that interesting? This is what I've heard.
Yeah.
Listen, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah. Right in.
right.
But yes, well, now you have a lemon tree, and now you can listen to it under your own lemon tree. What a beautiful thing.
And the smell of lemons, now I'm like forever just hearing the song in my head.
Yeah, we have a grapefruit tree that flowers every once in a while. And it's just like California citrus, baby.
I know, paradise.
Cannot fight it. Cannot fight it. Well, listen, I want to make sure, because I know this last song is a bit of an epic, so I want to make sure we have enough time to hear it. If people want to check out the EP, if people want to check out the music, they want to follow along, see what you're up to, tour dates, fingers crossed, live shows.
Yes, February.
February.
Mm-hmm.
Enough of these fall plans, Delta variant memes. Get back to shows.
Exactly. Yeah, if you want to hear any. The name Tomi.com. So it's spelled out the name Tomi.com. And that's also my Instagram handle. Yeah, all the info's on there, and the EP comes out October 8th, so check it out.
Amazing. Well, thank you. Thank you for sitting down again. I think the universe had a plan, and I think we knocked it out even more.
I think so, too. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, yeah, and thank you to Vonda for the last episode that we found that we recorded back in March 2020 that somehow lost in the shuffle that opened up the show. What a beautiful story of family and food. We have another episode next week, but here we go. Tomi, Lemon Tree is a single here on Snacky Tunes on hrn.org. We'll see you next time. Snacky Tunes is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.